All right, welcome everybody. This is Stack Hunters, and we're here, but without Bradley, because Bradley is busy working on a new addition to the family. He's got a little one on the way, be coming this week. Theo and I are pre-recording, so we're just going to hang out here and talk a little bit of tight ends and everything else, but it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm coming to you actually from Texas. I'm down here doing a little hunting, there's some nice wineries down here, and also saw the eclipse, so that was fantastic. And Theo, how's your week going for you?
My week is busy. It's good. This is like the grind time. We're getting ready for the NFL draft, finalizing things with some content, like the rookie guides dropping this week. It's awesome. But I want to give you a shout out, Dan. I saw you at the eclipse. You know, it was a great, you had some great pictures. Everybody check out Dan's Twitter. Dan, there's a picture of Dan and his wife. And Dan, it was also like a low-key t-shirt flex because you were wearing like a very highbrow art, something you purchased at a museum, I'm guessing. Like a nice art. Was that the Scream? What was it?
It was Starry Nights.
Yeah. Night. So Dan is in. I knew about your knowledge, your deep, extensive knowledge of music from recording with you so many times and being friends with you, but I did not know you were an art guy as well. So Starry Night, shout out Dan Williamson's t-shirt flex.
I've been dragged kicking and screaming into the art world by my wife and kids. So
kicking, screaming enough to buy the t-shirt though, Dan. She didn't drag you into the gift shop.
Yeah, we saw those t-shirts and we're like, we got to get these. These are cool. So it was, man, that eclipse was so much fun too. I mean, I'll tell you what, I was talking to somebody and I was like, I've seen, you know, like 90-95% eclipses, and the difference between, you know, and then after seeing this one, like even the difference between 99% and 100% is 1,000%. I mean, it's just like all of a sudden, if you saw it, you know what I'm talking about. And if you didn't see it, I mean, you just cannot even imagine what it's like to when it hits totality. It's just like a switch goes off. It's just the craziest thing you've ever seen. So a lot of fun.
You're in like the best part of the country. I have some family that I live on Long Island. I have a couple family members who went upstate to Lake Placid to see it. My kids have way too many activities on Sunday. So we actually joined them at Lake Placid. Then we had to go like against traffic on the way back to Long Island. But it's crazy. Some of these towns were like overrun with people to see the eclipse. Niagara Falls, they were saying people are going to run out of gas, get stuck on the road, all this kind of stuff. But Lake Placid, awesome place. But I'm glad you got to experience that in Texas. Now, would you have seen that when the totality in Minnesota? No, Minnesota was not there.
Okay. No, Minnesota, I think, was like maybe 50-60%, something like that. So it wouldn't have been nearly as good a show. So, I've got one of my best friends from college is down here. We're on his deer lease and just having a great time. So several families got together and, so much fun. But, we're here to talk about football. We're here to talk about specifically tight ends. So we were planning on having Andrew Cooper, Koopa Fiasco, come on. You know, there's nobody better to talk tight ends with. But unfortunately, he's a little bit under the weather. So we're gonna table a discussion of tight ends with him till after the draft and we see some landing spots and all that. But Theo and I still have plenty of time. Plenty of things to talk about tight end wise, so we're just gonna dive in as if we wish Andrew was here, but he's not, and we're gonna do well and we're gonna enjoy this. So Theo, let's dive right in and just kind of talk a little bit about Underdog first. I think probably most of our listeners are in on Underdog. Some of them are probably in on FFPC as well, so we're gonna hit both of those. But I just want to kind of dive in and talk about how you're approaching the tight end on Underdog. It's a onesie position, right? And only one flex there. How are you handling the tight end in Underdog, Theo?
So it's interesting this year because the first tight end going off the board on essentially the tournaments that are running now, which is like the big board and the biggest board. So it's a $10 and $100 contest. And you can only do three entries on the big S board, and then the $10 contest, they might let you do like 150. So for me, it's interesting. The most interesting thing is, Dan, And correct me if I'm wrong, this is probably the lowest that we're seeing tight end one being selected in quite some time. So there's a number of tight ends that people are kind of into in terms of like targets. And there's a couple of tight ends that I'm sure we're going to discuss today. But just in the general scheme of things, you can get tight end one at the end of the third round. Middle of the third round, it's sort of a lock. Like Sam LaPorta is sitting there for you in the middle of the third round. And he's certainly there, been there for me at the end of the third round a few times. I think his ADP is like 32. Yep. So that's what I think is the most interesting. Like the market's basically saying it's less of an edge this year to have tight end one than in previous years where like Travis Kelce was steamed way, way up. Or if you go before that, like the Gronks and the Jimmy Grahams, like the truly elite guys got really steamed up. 32 is low.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. And that, I think, can present a little bit of an advantage here, you know, because with the wide receivers all getting pushed up, taking that early tight end doesn't have quite the opportunity cost that it often does.
Yeah. No, I think you nailed it. It's I can get an elite tight end and I can do it using a third, fourth, or fifth round pick. The only thing those guys have to do is produce like elite tight ends. But I've liked hitting the upper echelon tight ends. And then I've also dove into sort of the tight end middle class with where I consider like the low end ones, high end twos, just because the one thing I don't want to have in like a best ball build is I don't want to have to like make up for it at volume. I want to have at least one guy that I can kind of lean on. So I've really liked taking Evan Ingram. I think he's a really good value at tight end eight. Brock Bowers, you know, I love him. Dan, yesterday on Twitter, I said he's a big Jordy Nelson combined with a little Shannon Sharp, and some people didn't like that. Some people loved it. And I'll say
that's good.
There you go, Jordy Nelson. There you go. And then I like the Njoku. Then I kind of hit the. I don't mind the Cole Kmet. I think Cole Kmet at like tight end 15 is kind of like the comfort level guy. And then there's a couple of lower value guys that I've been diving into. So I'd say I have like a pretty wide net of how I'm attacking the tight end position right now on Underdog. But I do like LaPorta as tight end one. I think the market might be undervaluing him a little bit at 32 overall.
Yeah, I think that's quite likely as well. And, you know, as far as tight ends, I'm approaching it a lot the same way as you are. You know, I want to get at least one guy that I feel pretty comfortable with so that I don't want to feel that pressure, you know, as the draft is going on, you know, and maybe I need to, you know, look out for quarterback or I need to shore up my running back room or whatever. I don't want to have my tight end where it's all of a sudden, you know, I got to do something here and veer away from a position that I might want to hit a little bit more. Do you find that, well, let me ask you this first. How many tight ends are you normally drafting in an Underdog draft?
I feel like I like my builds the most when I have a three tight end build. And then that being said, I have a couple of like very fragile two tight end builds where maybe I would have started out with like a Kittle and a Bowers, just the way it presented itself, whether I was building a stack or whether I was just value hunting. And then I have a few of these four tight end builds. And my four tight end builds, I usually find myself drafting the Tucker Crafts, the Ben Sinnott's. That's sort of like my low-end tight ends that I've been diving to. I have a few Zach Ertz picks lately just because it feels like it's going to be an ugly source of early value in Washington, especially with a rookie quarterback starting, but not too much. I feel like Kraft for me and Ben Sinnott, he used to be a little cheaper. He's like tight end 33 now, but I feel like he's the kind of guy that's going to move up after the NFL draft because I think he's going to get the draft capital we want to see, and he's just translates into fantasy football. He can move. He had a high A dot. I love what he did at Kansas State and what he did at the NFL Combine. He had the best vertical leap among any tight end, and he had a faster 40 than Jatavion Sanders, who was a guy I was expecting to like a lot more than Sinnott. Right now, I feel like tight end two and tight end three are sort of close right now in dynasty and certainly for NFL draft rankings. So I've been trying to dive into that value. Sanders is fine, too, at tight end 28. But again, it's like a full two rounds ahead of Sinnott. Sometimes Sinnott doesn't get drafted.
Right. Yeah. And the funny thing for me is that, I had Sanders in front of Sanat as well until after the combine, and then they've kind of flipped for me. What I've kind of struggled with is I don't want to, it's like I almost have flipped it too hard. Like I shouldn't be out hard on Sanders, but I was just so disappointed by his combine that I'm having to kind of fight against that because I'm like, this guy still has does have a lot of things to recommend himself. He still has a, paths to success in the NFL. He's gonna get fairly early draft capital. He's almost certainly day two. He's he could end up going to a good team. There's a lot of things that can break really well for him, even though the combine didn't break especially well for him. So, you have to kind of watch, or at least I do. I have to watch myself and make sure I don't get too down on guys I shouldn't be too down on. And then I think, another thing, and the way I approach the tight end position is I'm always trying to, look at it as, if I get one of those early guys, I don't mind sitting and waiting for quite a while to pick up my last two tight ends because it really takes the pressure off. So with me, as long as I've got a tight end by the time, Evan Engram or Brock Bowers comes through, I feel pretty good about it. I'll wait as late as I need to pick up tight ends. I'll just pick them up whenever, there's just nothing particularly interesting at another position when it's my turn to pick, as far as ADP goes. If I get down below that, then I'm going to start prioritizing getting a second tight end. And one thing I've even done, if TJ Hockenson drops, and I don't have a tight end one, I'm not afraid to take Hock as my tight end one, but then I'm going to follow it up really quick with a couple other guys. So it kind of helps me vary up my build a little bit.
Yeah, I like your take on Hawk. I think that one's interesting, and I think when if we get like a little more clarity close to the, after the draft and kind of see which way Minnesota is going to go at the tight end two position, you could consider a Minnesota double tap without spending a whole lot. But we want to have a little more clarity and not make sure that Minnesota doesn't do something weird like draft a tight end in the fourth round with some receiving ability. But I also think that this year I found myself taking Michael Mayer a lot because Las Vegas stacks are so easy to build right now. Not necessarily with Davante Adams, but I've been able to have like Jacoby Myers, Michael Mayer, and then sometimes a little Zamir White with like Gardner Minshew or simply without the quarterback and just have a little bit of Las Vegas exposure. Mayer is a guy that I like as like a dynasty trade target. I know you do as well. I think it's just sort of a low-hanging fruit for a guy that a year from now is going to be drafted higher than where we're seeing him. And the markets already has him at tight end 18 without him really doing anything as a rookie. He had like maybe 3 weeks of tight end two or better. And a lot of weeks he was kind of invisible, but people kind of see it coming. Doesn't have Austin Hooper there anymore. I think Mayer is an easy one. And I've liked just the kind of the correlating with the tight end in general with my stacks this year. Wide receiver is just so steamed up that a lot of times it's easy to get that, second player and a second receiver instead of trying to jam in a Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle to a stack. I could go Devon Achane to a Jonnu Smith, something like weird like that. So I don't know. I think the wide receiver this year is kind of throwing everything for a loop because it's just so aggressive.
Yeah, it really is aggressive. And the fact, as we touched on earlier, the fact that tight end is kind of depressed in value compared to the wide receivers makes it a lot easier to get, kind of fill in on tight end. And one of the things I like to, also is with these early drafts, you get 20 rounds instead of 18. So it gives you a little bit more flexibility, to push that tight end even a little bit later if you need to. I even have I think I have one or two builds where I have four tight ends. And a couple of them are super, super late. Sanat being one, and Ertz you mentioned, Dulcich. There's some guys that are just going in the last round or two. And we can take advantage of those things. And stacking wise, another thing is you can also stack not only within a team, but also tight ends give you with their late ADP, they give you an opportunity to kind of stack within divisions as well. Like I've been stacking, a lot of NFC South, and I'll throw a Cade Otton in there. You know, just because we don't know the schedule yet, but we do know that divisional games tend to come at the end of the year. So, you know, there's a good chance if you can run together a bunch of NFC South guys or NFC North guys, you know, you're going to end up with some good correlation there that you couldn't really definitely count on beforehand, but it's just likely to happen anyway. Thoughts on that?
I know I'm kind of completely with you. I haven't, to be honest with you, I haven't really dove into the stacking divisions theory. I know some people do it. It always helps us when we kind of know the schedule too, Dan, but they're not going to drop that for a little bit. I think the stacking divisions is a very smart and sharp way of kind of having potential, you know, smash games, spike week type games where you're kind of chasing it. And I like that you bring up the NFC South because a lot of these players are super affordable. You know, a lot of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, right? Even Mike Evans is affordable. Rashad White's affordable based on how they scored last year. And certainly there's Atlanta guys have gotten steamed up big time. But New Orleans, a lot of the guys are still cheap and affordable. So I think those are all like, that's definitely a sharp way of doing it and kind of building a little further correlation that maybe a lot of people are not really chasing right now. Cause I think the people chase the game weeks, but they don't necessarily chase the divisions.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, a couple more, you know, like when you're really late at quarterback and tight end, you can be doing like Derek Carr and Juwan Johnson. You can do Baker Mayfield and Kate Otten, you know, and it's pretty easy to get those guys together even late. So, you know, like you can have, maybe you got a couple Atlanta guys early and then you can add on one of these stacks with, you know, New Orleans Saints or Tampa or whatever, and, you know, really kind of supercharge that stack, at least for 1 week, you know. And we have seen times also that where the NFL has, like, you know, divisional rivals playing each other twice in 3 weeks at the end of the season, you know, where you might get a, you know, a Tampa-New Orleans game and then a New Orleans-Tampa game weeks 15 and 17. So, you know, sometimes you can sort of do the, you know, double your pleasure thing there.
Why don't we take a quick break, and then we'll come back with more tight end talk right here on Stack Hunters.
All right, and we're back.
This episode brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog Fantasy has been sponsoring Player Profiler and everything we're doing here since 2020. Sign up. Use promo code UNDERWORLD for a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. 100% instant deposit match up to $100. And you're like, oh, well, you know, everyone's on Underdog. Not true. There's plenty of people in this audience that have not yet tried out Underdog, and it's time. They're adding more sports. They're adding more contests. Like when we're heading into NFL draft season, there's the rookies and sophomores game. When you think about way too early fantasy football, that's what Underdog is. When you think about best ball, that's what Underdog is. And if you can pick players at the end of an Underdog fantasy best ball draft that are under rostered, that few people are picking at all, and that guy, like Kyren Williams, hits, you will likely experience positive returns. All you need is that one guy at the end who no one else is rostering, and the way to find that guy is to listen to us. UnderdogFantasy.com. The promo code is UNDERWORLD. 100% deposit match up to $100 with promo code UNDERWORLD. Underdog makes everything we do possible.
All right, welcome back, everybody, and let's keep talking a little bit of tight ends. Just one thing I want to do before we get away from Underdog is just kind of talk about each of the tiers of tight ends. I kind of have them divided into tiers. You know, to me, there's kind of the early tier, which is Laporta and Kelce. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like there's a little break. And then the next tier, it's just kind of steady, you know, a tight end every few picks, tight end every few picks, all the way from McBride all the way through Bauer. So we'll maybe treat both of those kind of as one big tier. You know, you talked about Laporta, as being a favorite of yours because he's so depressed relative to the wide receivers. How do you feel about Travis Kelce in that top tier? He's running about 9 picks later than Laporta. Are you in on Kelce at all, or is this somebody you're avoiding?
I'm sort of like, I don't know. It's one of those things where you don't want to not have Travis Kelce, but I never feel like super enthusiastic about drafting Travis Kelce. He had just so many quiet, you know, uneventful weeks. And then he gives us the Baltimore playoff game where he kind of reminds everybody what a fantastic talent he is. I just think you could see more of the quiet weeks this coming year. I fully expect Kansas City to draft a wide receiver. They've added Hollywood Brown. They have Rashi Rice in year two. Even if he's suspended a game or three, he's still going to be there. So I feel like the offense is changing a little bit. Kelsey's safe, but what am I getting out of Travis Kelce that I'm not getting out of, like, and I don't know, people can throw tomatoes at me for saying this, but Evan Engram at tight end eight could outscore Travis Kelce, who's tight end two right now. And then if I look for spike weeks, like Trey McBride, Mark Andrews, those two guys kind of maybe excite me just as much as Travis Kelce right now. And then that's not even including like a couple other tight ends that I like Dalton Kincaid, Pitts. So I don't know. If I want a highly targeted veteran tight end, Evan Engram, he's just right there. And the guy had like, you know, and I can get Evan Engram right now is pick 76. So I'm getting him, three rounds cheaper than Kelce.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of how I've been looking at it as well. It's just, you know, to me, the opportunity cost of Kelce is a little bit steep right now. As you said, you know, you don't want to be completely naked on him, and just not have any. But, it's there are just so many better values on down. And let's look at that McBride through Bowers. We're basically talking about picks 50 through 80, you know, so about a 2.5 round window there. We've got seven tight ends going off the board in that range. So, you know, they're just kind of getting plucked off one by one in there. Your favorite is Evan Engram, it sounds like, Theo. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Let me list them off real quick. We've got McBride, Andrews, Kincaid, Pitts, Kittle, Engram, and Bowers in there.
I'd say Engram gives me that weekly floor that allows me to do other things with my build. I think that the changes made in Jacksonville this offseason are kind of beneficial to Engram, where Calvin Ridley takes 135 targets with him to Tennessee. He's replaced essentially, and some people say, you know, Gabe Davis's role is not going to be the same. It's going to be different than Ridley, certainly. Gabe Davis is not a 135 target guy. But Gabe Davis is going to be on the field a ton, and he's different. So I feel like this insulates Engram, and to a lesser extent, it insulates Christian Kirk as guys that I can kind of depend on for weekly targets in that offense. And again, it's all relative. Like Evan Engram, he's at pick 76, where a lot of the – and Brock Bowers, for that matter, at pick 80. Those two guys are at a point in the draft where the wide receivers have cleared up even more. Whereas when you draft Kyle Pitts or Dalton Kincaid, you still have the opportunity cost of, you know, wide receivers like Jaden Reed, Kirk, Hollywood Brown, like appealing wide receivers are still there, and wide receiver is getting steamed so much. So I think for me, it's really Engram's the best combination of price and potential weekly production.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And also, you know, it's kind of in a nice spot all in the draft, seventh round. You get into the seventh round, for me, that's where I'm taking a look and kind of assessing where my team is at. You know, if Engram fits this build, I know now is the time to go get him when my pick comes up in that round, because he'll usually be there, 60% of the time, depending on where in the round you're picking. But 60-70% of the time, you can get him or Bowers, one of the two. And, you know, and to me, there's a little bit of a step down once you get past those guys. My confidence level goes down another notch. So, you know, I like to look at those guys, and unless I'm seeing a compelling value at one of the other positions, there's a pretty good chance I'm snagging one of those guys if I don't have a tight end already. If I do have a tight end already, I'm probably not double dipping into this, you know, kind of second tier of tight ends just because the opportunity cost is too high. When you only have the one flex, if you have two kind of elite-ish tight ends, there's a decent chance one of them might be sitting on your bench every week when the scores are tallied up. So I would rather have that spot go into a wide receiver or running back.
David Njoku is the only one I kind of push back, because I do agree that the next tier, like Ferguson, I really like if I'm building Cowboy stacks. I think that's just a no-brainer. If you end up drafting a CD go ahead and add a Jake Ferguson, and then you can add a Dak. It's pretty clear with the touchdown upside. But Dallas Goedert, it's only if I draft Hurts. Dalton Schultz, only if I draft C.J. Stroud. Hockenson's the weird one. You brought up his value, but he forces you to draft multiple tight ends because he might miss half a year. And then Kmet, it's like I really like Kmet, and I've built some Bears stacks, but I truly think that there's a chance that they draft Brock Bowers at 9. And it's 70 catch Kmet becomes like 45 catch Kmet in like a year. And Bowers like overtakes it. I don't know if that's what I would do if I was the Bears, but they had a top 30 visit with Bowers. Apparently Caleb Williams loves Bowers. I think they want to make Caleb really happy with that pick, even though he's a rookie. Just have him coming in a good peace of mind where I don't think they're taking like a defensive player. I think they're going offensive side of the ball with 9 overall or trading down and taking an offensive player. David Njoku is the one I push back with you a little bit because I think we saw him take a big step forward last year. He gets the 80 reception season. He goes over almost 900 receiving yards. It just seems like David Njoku is in a really good place. You have the same coaching staff returning to Cleveland. I understand the argument that they bring in Jerry Jeudy. The offense is changing a little bit, but and the fact that Flacco kind of propped up Njoku. But I think at the end of the day, it's kind of hard to put that back in the bottle. He was so good down the stretch. You have to think that this coaching staff, especially with going into the season, not knowing when we're going to get Nick Chubb, that Njoku is at least having a shot at being a number two target in an offense. I don't know if he'll get there, but I think he'll be close to it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And to me, Njoku is a little bit of a, you know, a referendum on how you feel about Deshaun Watson, too. Because if you feel good about Watson, then you should definitely be pushing Njoku up into that tier. And he becomes another, you know, kind of last gasp option of that top tier. If you're a little bit less high on Watson, then he might drop down to the next tier and you might be passing him over a little bit more often, you know, because I think it's partially how good is Deshaun Watson going to do. And also, you know, as you pointed out with Flacco, I mean, Flacco was just relentlessly targeting Njoku, and Watson hadn't really done so to that extent. But as you said, you know, he's a legit talent. So, you know, Watson may be looking his way a little bit more when he comes back. And that's what we want to see is, you know, Watson's eyes going to Njoku quite a bit. I'm disgusted and horrified, though, Theo, by the thought of Brock Bowers in Chicago. Because, you know, I think you're exactly right about Kmet in that Kmet has, you know, there's some real danger there. Not only could Brock Bowers all of a sudden get airdropped in, but they already have Gerald Everett in there, who's a good receiving tight end. And we've got Shane Waldron as the offensive coordinator, you know. And I know, you know, Bradley and I were talking about this a little bit last week as we were drafting. But, you know, Waldron last year, we had Disley, we had Fant, and we had
Parkinson,
yeah. All in Seattle, you know, and all of them were like 50 targets a year, you know, and it was disgusting and gross, and you could almost never count on them. You know, not quite so bad for best ball, but the thing is, you just, you know, when you're only getting 50 targets, you know, that's like, you know, around 17, 18 tight end. You don't want to be picking them that high. And if something like that happened to Kmet, that would be just totally disgusting.
Yeah, it would be absolutely disgusting. Kmet's one of those, not to get off best ball subject, but like he's one of those dynasty values where he's like 25 years old. He just caught 70 passes. We like him. He's worth something. And that could like completely change like overnight. So I hope, I don't want to see Brock Bowers in Chicago either. I'd much rather see Brock Bowers in, you know, I can name 5-6 places. I'd rather see him. But I think, you know, in terms of the spike week potential, it would still be there. For best ball, it might affect you a little bit in like your views on him as a you know, a two tight end build type guy, but you still could talk yourself into it, Dan, because that the touchdown upside with DJ Moore and Keenan Allen in that offense, Bowers could end up being like a really, really fun big play type guy, but it definitely caps his weekly target ceiling if that with that landing spot.
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, if Bowers lands in Chicago, I think we're he's going to drop about three rounds in ADP right there, especially over on Underdog. It's going to be gross.
Yeah,
you know, and people will recognize that, and they might push him down too far. He might actually start turning into a little bit more of a value. But of course, with these, you know, these pre-NFL draft, it's not going to really matter too much what happens after the draft, as far as like your value relative to everybody else. Like, you know, nobody's going to suddenly start getting Bowers at a three-round discount on you because, you know, the contest will be over and locked. So, you know, the question will be, you know, was Bowers where he went in the seventh round? Was that a good value or was it not? So those are more of the questions we have to ask in these first best balls that are going through. Let's look real quick also at, you know, there's kind of another level of producers. They're kind of dart throws, potentially guys who could step up a little bit. You know, basically in the underdog streets, this kind of starts around about, I would say, Michael Meyer. You know, there's about a one-round gap between Musgrave and Meyer. And then you start seeing tight ends popping off again. You know, we got Meyer, Otten, Hunter Henry, Isaiah Likely, Jonnu Smith, Juwan Johnson, Tyler Conklin, Chigo Conquo, Noah Fant, you could throw in there. You know, so it kind of goes down a ways. You know, you could go all the way down to Tucker Kraft at 215. But are there any tight ends in this range that you've been targeting especially hard?
It's definitely been Noah Fant because you're getting him right around pick 200. And you brought up Will Dissly. You brought up Colby Parkinson. Those guys are gone from Seattle. I also really like the hire of Ryan Grubb. This is a guy who has been, you know, synonymous with passing the football, being aggressive, having strong offensive line play. Really a fun and I think like really like an inspired, very cool hire for Mike McDonald to make. It's sort of like the opportunity Mike McDonald was given to run the defense coming out of Michigan to go get hired at in Baltimore. I love going into the college ranks because I think you see a little bit less of a, you know, everybody's the same type thinking, a little bit more outside the box, a little newness. So I think that the Seattle passing game is going to be effective. And the fact that those other two kind of Jags are gone, like Noah Fant is still young. He's in the same draft class as TJ Hockenson. I believe Noah Fant is 26 or 27 years old right now. And Noah Fant gave us two tight end one seasons in Denver. So we've already seen it from him. Now it's sort of a chance to kind of like, you know, it's, and I'm not going to say it's going to be Evan Engram, but we saw Evan Engram flash as a young player, then sort of disappear, have those middling seasons. Everybody sort of writes him off. And then he has a huge bounce back year. Fant could do that in the same team this year where I think he could really, you know, let's say, I don't think he's going to be a tight end one, but he's being drafted as tight end 26. He could be tight end 15 and beat his ADP by 11, 10 spots.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. I mean, you know, when he came out, he was, you know, so physically gifted and still is. You know, it's just that no team has really bothered to unlock that. And I don't really think it's his fault. I think it's more of a scheme fault than, you know, anything he's doing or not doing himself. You know, so those are players I love to gamble on, you know, where I have, you know, a player that's just got a ton of talent, a ton of athleticism. All they need is the targets, you know, and if he can find his way into the targets, and it's no sure thing. And that's why, you know, that's why he's sitting down there, you know, like pick 200 or whatever it is, you know, is because we do have DK Metcalf. We've got Lockett. We've got JSN, you know, so we've got targets there. You know, and any or possibly all of them can end up with more targets than Fant. But it's also, you know, I can see the path where, you know, Fant could be the number two target in that offense. You know, if let's say Lockett gets traded or Lockett suddenly isn't nearly as effective, DK Metcalf gets hurt, things like that can happen. So there's some paths for him there. And, yeah. You know, that's what you want is a path.
Yeah. And it's interesting because you bring up the three wide receivers. But his value also gets a little bit depressed because Charbonnet is there. So, like, people who are building Seattle, like, correlation and stacks, like, Charbonnet and Walker are both top 40 running backs. So you get to a point where Noah Fant is not only a value, like, relatively at the tight end position, but he's also the sixth Seattle skill position player being drafted in this tournament. So it's a value. I really think it is. And if you miss on it, he's probably your tight end three. So structurally, it's not going to burn you. Going into it with him as my tight end two, I'd be a little bit uncomfortable unless it was with like a Laporta, somebody I could really hang my hat on.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, the other thing about the tight ends in this range is, you know, what kind of guides me to, you know, particular tight ends other than Fant here is, you know, how is it going to fit with my stacking? You know, as far as especially those divisional stacks, you know, where I'm trying to stack the NFC South or, you know, AFC West or whatever it might happen to be. You know, I can find a tight end in this range that is going to fit into that stack. And I will typically, in almost all my underdog drafts, I'm making sure I grab some tight end out of this range because I can make it work with almost any stack. And I can make my team a little bit stronger, you know, add that correlation. And, you know, I'm still getting a relatively decent tight end, you know, one who's going to pop in a few weeks, hopefully, for me.
No, for sure.
Yeah. And so any of the really late tight ends that you like, you know, like anybody after, say, Dawson Knox. And, you know, in this format, we're talking about, you know, pick 224, you know. So basically, these guys are last round. You know, we've got Knox, Waller, Sanat we talked about already. Dulcich we talked about a little bit. But who are you liking in the really, really late areas?
I want to clarify that it's not like is not the right word for this, but I do think one guy that's a little bit under the radar, and he's under the radar for good reason because he's, you know, not that great a player, but situationally, the Chargers went out and got Will Disley and they paid Will Disley. And if we look at what Greg Roman's offense is, the two positions we can kind of lean on for Greg Roman's offense is, and Harbaugh offenses, for that matter, is the tight end position. This guy is not going to be Mark Andrews. He's certainly not going to be Vernon Davis. But at the end of the day, if Will Disley survives the NFL draft, we've never seen Donald Parham be treated as some guy who can get 60, 70% of the snaps. So Will Disley might be on the field 70% of the time in a run-based offense where he's like the play-action guy. He's the release guy. Maybe they do, I don't know, Greg Roman, you don't know, but maybe a few little RPOs here and there where Will Disley just eats a chunk of yards. And right now the wide receivers in LA, it's kind of Josh Palmer. I'm one of these people that thinks Harbaugh is not going to care about Quentin Johnston. He's going to draft somebody and, you know, we'll see. Everybody wants the Chargers to go ahead and draft a wide receiver in the first round. They want him to draft Blake Corum in the third round. But I actually think it's going to be the whole first day of the NFL draft. It's going to be like Harbaugh takes an offensive tackle. Harbaugh takes an edge rusher. Harbaugh takes like a cornerback. And he gets those foundational pieces that he's going to be so excited about. And then he'll just fill the skill positions in on day three. So day one and day two are not going to go how we want them to. I think Will Disley at the end of the day might end up being just the starting tight end on a team with a lack of pass catchers with one of the best quarterbacks in football. Even though the offense is ugly, I could see Disley, he's tight end 42. I could see him finishing like tight end 18, tight end 20, and beating that ADP by a considerable margin.
Right, exactly. And, you know, one thing you can do here, because you do have the extra two rounds, you know, we've got 20 rounds instead of 18. And this I've done actually when I did one of my four tight end stacks. I took both Disley and Hayden Hurst, you know, because both of them were brought in. Hayden Hurst, you know, we know is a pass catcher. You know, I don't think there's any, you know, like magical upside there with Hurst, but if they prefer him in certain situations, you know, if you've got Hurst and Disley both, I think you can kind of Frankenstein together, you know, that last tight end spot, you know, because you do have the luxury of those extra two rounds. You know, most of the time I'm using those extra rounds to take, you know, hero shots on wide receiver, running back or whatever like that. But if I feel like my tight end room is kind of gross, that's another way to attack it.
Yeah. Hurst is, I don't know. To me, I feel like Disley's the one they went out and got first.
Right.
And money-wise, I know Disley got the $10 million guaranteed. I'm not quite sure what Hurst got.
Yeah.
Do we know that one?
Not off the top of my head, to be honest. But,
yeah,
you know, I kind of like the fact that they went out and, you know, they got both of those guys. And, you know, Hurst came from Baltimore where, you know, the Harbaugh brothers, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I feel like there might be, you know, just something there. I mean, it's more narrative street probably than anything. But, you know, sometimes narrative street works out well, too. So,
God, Harbaugh and Roman, there's been nothing this offseason to get you excited fantasy-wise. It's just so Gus Edwards, Hayden Hurst, Will Disley, and everybody's like pounding the table for them to at least keep one of the wide receivers. Both the wide receivers are gone.
It's gross, yeah. And as you said, you know, they're probably going to wait until day three to address anything, and people are just going to be, you know, just looking at the Chargers in absolute total disgust. I mean, they could end up being some of the real values of draft season when all is said and done, because you know one or two of those guys is going to have value and they're going to come cheap. So
that's 85 catch Josh Palmer.
Right. Oh my gosh. If Josh Palmer is a wide receiver one in that offense, that would be
awful. Yeah.
Awful and amazing all at the same time. So, well, let's, before we get out of here, a couple things I want to hit. I want to talk a little bit about the FFPC, you know, because over at the FFPC and their best ball tournaments, you have the 1.5 PPR for tight end. So you've got the tight end premium, and it's a double flex too. So, you know, there's a little bit more opportunity to get a tight end slid into your starting lineup. So I'm curious, Theo, how are you approaching the tight end in the FFPC best balls? What does that do differently than what we've already talked about with underdog?
I think it's like night and day, because the underdog drafter pushes tight end values way down, whereas the FFPC drafter is going to attack the tight end values. A guy like Evan Engram with a 1.5 point premium, or Travis Kelce with the 1.5 point premium versus the half point underdog, it's like two different players. So on FFPC, I'm way more apt to do things like have two solid tight ends drafted, not quite bully tight end. I don't know what if there's a legal definition of bully tight end, but I don't mind going with like the like a Pitts and a Kincaid, or a Kincaid and an Engram, and have like those two tight ends in like the earlier rounds. Now Kincaid's like a third round pick now on FFPC. Darren Armani, Fantasy Mojo, was tweeting that out earlier this week. So Kincaid steamed up, but I feel like it's almost more of a necessity to have two reliable tight ends, in the FFPC streets. I'm also more apt to try to take dart throws on tight ends, in the last few rounds, even though it's difficult, but when it pays off, it really, really pays off. Whereas underdog, the last few rounds, I love taking those wide receivers, the Greg Dortches, the Josh Reynolds, those kind of guys kind of excite me a little bit more than they would in FFPC. So it's like two different contests, Dan.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, as you said, with that double flex, it allows you to get a couple of guys in there, you know, in the 1.5 tight end premium, puts them a little bit more on par with wide receivers and running backs as well. So that, you know, there are more ways for your tight ends to get into your lineup. And so that makes it worth justifying prioritizing them a little bit. So I'm pretty much doing the same thing, you know. And the one thing is also, you know, of course, in the FFPC, everybody's doing that. Like Evan Engram is going 2.5 rounds earlier on FFPC than he's going on underdog. And to me, a guy like Engram also provides a little bit of extra oomph in the FFPC, because with underdog, it's only half point PPR. And with 1.5 point, you know, Engram is one of those higher volume guys, you know, not necessarily as touchdown dependent, but, you know, you want to look for guys in FFPC that are regularly getting included in the passing offense rather than the guys who are getting, you know, like, you know, 3 for 36 and a touchdown. You want to get the guys who are getting, you know, like 6 for 66 and maybe no score, and it's still worth almost pretty much the same amount to you. So, you know, there's different ways your tight ends can get in there for you.
Sure.
Yeah. Are there any particular values that you like in FFPC? You know, like we just talked about Ingram, but are there players that you're gravitating more towards in the FFPC than anywhere else?
I love Isaiah Likely in these sort of situations because we've seen the spike weeks and we've seen the contingent upside. And also I love stacking him with Lamar Jackson. It's like 2 years in a row, Dan, where we've seen like the value of Likely when Andrews misses and the market never kind of really corrects itself. And again, this year, he's going to still have an uphill battle for getting targets week one, week two. But when he gets the opportunity, he's very fantasy friendly. And a lot of people say, Theo, I started him, you know, week one last year in the NFL season. What happened? That one was like the mulligan game. Most of the other time, he's been super productive and he gives you sort of a Andrews light role. And he's done it with two different offensive coordinators now, both utilizing him in this sort of situation. So I've liked Isaiah Likely. I also, again, I brought up, you know, Ben Sinnott. I really like him in this sort of format just because I think I generally think, you know, best ball values most of the time when you draft a rookie, sometimes you get burned if you take them in early best balls before the landing spots. But a lot of times you gain exceptional value. I think Ben Sinnott is one like that. I think when we come and draft in August, he's more like tight end 25. And now he's kind of pushed down into the 30s.
Right, exactly. And, you know, one I like when he drops a little bit is Kyle Pitts, because I think he's going to get some pretty good volume in Atlanta. You know, so I think the catch total will be high, whether the touchdowns follow that or not. Pitts has not been a touchdown producer really at all in his career. Maybe that can change, but even if it doesn't, still just the, you know, the volume of catches can definitely help him out there.
And 23 years old, Dan.
Yeah, I know. He's still extremely young. So, you know, we saw it took Njoku a long time to develop. You know, so we hope Pitts is gonna, you know, be on that or faster of a time, a track. Jake Ferguson is another one I really, really like because Dak Prescott just absolutely peppers Ferguson with targets. And, you know, we can pick him up basically at the end of the sixth round, you know, a lot of times early seventh, which is a fantastic value. And it's nice to be able to, you know, he's kind of my sort of my stopgap. If I don't have my tight end one, you know, Ferguson is a place where I'm looking. Because I think, you know, like between him and Goddard, who's not that much cheaper, you know, Ferguson is like only 7 or 8 picks ahead of Goddard. And I think he's like, you know, probably should be going a couple of rounds ahead of Goddard.
Yeah, I like that one. I like Ferguson a lot, you know, especially when I'm stacking the Cowboys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right. Any other FFPC tight end values that you really want to talk about?
No, I mean, I think it's just a general strategy for the position where it's more of a, I don't want to get boxed out at tight end. Whereas on underdog, you know, the making up for it with volume is a little bit more appealing than FFPC, because when you have to make up for it on volume on underdog, you're still able to get a couple of those guys in like rounds 15 through 20. Whereas on FFPC, you've done this a million times, Dan, where you see these tight end runs where it gets so dried up. Then you find yourself having to use those 11th, 12th, 13th round picks to kind of clean up the tight ends with a clear path. And then you're missing out on potential league winners at running back, because those kind of guys happen every single year where we see maybe a handcuff running back, maybe a younger running back who breaks out. A lot of times those guys are in that 11, 12, 13 round. So for me, it's more of a structural thing where I want to make sure I feel comfortable, where I don't feel like I'm painted into a corner trying to make up for it at one position.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I guess the way I look at it, it gets late early at tight end in FFPC, you know, and especially if you're sitting on the ends, you got to really watch it because those tight end runs can happen at any time. And, you know, if you do your two picks on the end and then it, you know, it's gone for, you know, 20, 22 picks away from you. And all of a sudden, you know, like 7 tight ends go off. It's like, you have just, you know, you've dropped down one tier, maybe two, You know, just in the space of, you know, just between your two picks there. So,
that 1-2 turn, that's a great point, Dan, because if you look at kind of the way ADP is shaking out, when you don't, if you have pick 12 around that range and you don't take a Laporta 12, you know, 11, somewhere in that range, then you a lot of times get boxed out from the next go round of tight ends. So it's definitely, that's one to, like, again, shout out to Darren. And we'll have some FFPC ADP up on the site current throughout the drafting season, but he really, really breaks it down. A lot of times you'll see these really, really good looking teams at like 1 or 12 that end up having to do what we talked about you don't want to do, like using their 10th, 9th round pick, 10th round pick, 11th round pick, trying to make up for it at tight end.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the reasons why I like Ferguson too, because if you don't take that Laporta, he's often there on that back end of the snake when you're coming around in the, you know, sixth round. You know, you can grab him late sixth, early seventh a lot of times. So he makes a lot of sense there. So real quick, Theo, before we go, let's talk about some potential tight end landing spots. Give me a couple teams that you really like that you think, you know, like we were talking about Benson Ott or Jatavion Sanders. You know, if one of these guys winds up on this team, that's going to excite you. What teams are you looking at for guys like that?
I think Washington's really interesting. We brought up the fact that Zach Ertz is there, but this we're talking about a very, very older tight end. I think there's sort of a gap there and an opportunity. Cincinnati, if they were to get Brock Bowers, I would really like that because he'd be attached to Joe Burrow, and we don't know where T. Higgins is going to be in a year. I think that the Giants are actually an underrated landing spot for one of these tight ends because Darren Waller's situation, we don't know when he's going to be back. And then Denver. Denver, I feel like this is one where if they don't go quarterback, I feel like they'll take Brock Bowers if he's there at 12. A lot of people will say, you know, we want Brock Bowers attached to an elite quarterback. But there's arguably no better path for him to be the number one target in an offense than Denver. So Denver, to me, is a really good one for a Bowers. And then for like a Sanat and a Sanders, you know, sort of the usual suspects, pretty much any team that has a poor situation at tight end and a path where those guys could be a weekly, you know, tight end too, I'm fine with. You know, we talked about L.A. That one scares me a little bit now because I feel like it's going to be a tight end by committee. I think that Indianapolis is interesting because they don't have a clear tight end there. There's a number of tight ends. I believe in both of those guys as their ability to kind of beat out some of these jag tight ends and make an impact.
Yeah, without a doubt. As you say, LA, I'm assuming you were talking Chargers there.
Yeah, that one's going to be ugly. LA yeah. Rams, I might. The LA Rams is a fun one though, Dan, because you got Davis Allen and Colby Parkinson. Those two guys scream like, hey, somebody could take over for them. And we've seen McVay draft young tight ends. He drafted Higbee, and Higbee was a pretty highly regarded prospect who had some off-the-field incidents, bar fight. And then he drafted Jordan Reed. That was his Gerald Everett was his first draft pick ever as Rams head coach. So maybe he goes back to it and surprises us with one of these appealing tight ends.
Yeah, that was one of the spots I really liked too. It's kind of sneaky, and you know, because Higbee got hurt at the very, very end of the season. You know, so he's probably on the TJ Hockenson plan, if that, because it was a pretty bad injury for his knee. You know, so we might not see Higbee for a good chunk of the year. So I think there's an opening there. I think the Jets are really an interesting spot too, because of just the fact that, you know, there's Garrett Wilson and, you know, Breece Hall, and then there's just not a whole lot else. I mean, you know, the last thing we want is Alan Lazard, you know, scooping up the targets that, you know, Mike Williams can't handle. Or what if Mike Williams gets hurt? You know, like a good tight end would fit really well there. You know, and the Bengals, I think, might be really interested in taking a tight end too, because Joe Burrow's contract is about to get more expensive. This is the last cheap year of his contract, and then it gets more expensive. So they're going to need to start backfilling with some cheaper receiving options, because, you know, T. Higgins, if they just let him play on the tag this year, they're probably going to let him walk next year because they won't be able to afford to tag him again. They certainly probably won't want to, you know, sign him to a long-term deal, because that's going to cost him a lot of money too. So, you know, backfilling with a Brock Bowers on a rookie contract would probably be very, very appealing for them. So I think that would be a really, really fun spot too.
Yeah, no, I would love that one. I'd love that one for Bowers.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. All right, well, Theo, we're going to let you get out of here. You've got plenty of family activities to do. Theo and I were talking beforehand, and he's doing the Mr. Mom thing for a couple days here, and I've definitely been in those shoes. I'll use a good term. It's exhilarating, right?
Yes, everyone loves burning the candle on both ends.
No doubt about that. But thank you for coming on today, Theo. I really appreciate it. Always fun to talk to you. Theo also, for those of you who play Dynasty, I know this is a best ball show, but Theo and I are locked into another startup league, which is with some super heavy hitters. And this league is so fun. So I expect we're probably going to have some content coming out of that too. In the Dynasty streets as well. But thanks for coming on, Theo. Next week for Stack Hunters, things are a little bit wide open because we're not sure, if Bradley will be able to be back. If he's not, then you're definitely going to see me. We'll line up a good guest but we're going to have some fun. Maybe we'll do a draft. Maybe we'll talk about a different position, but, it'll be good, whatever we do. So I want to thank everybody for listening today, and make sure that you follow me at Overhyped Sleeper, drop the final E from Sleeper. Of course you should be following Theo, and definitely when that rookie guide drops, cause it's dropping this week, get your hands on that. That is, I'm just pumped to get on that that rookie guide, because Theo, you've lined up it's just absolute monsters, to examine all these rookies. We got Cody Carpentier, we got Scott Bellinger, Jax Falcone, we've got Chalk, we've got Matty Kiwoom. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. I can't list them all because every one of them is a star. John Long
and Dan Williamson giving his breakdown of Brian Thomas, and Bradley Stalder giving his breakdown of Jonathan Brooks. So we got a lot of really cool people involved. Yeah, it's going to be really cool. It was a lot of work, and we're really, really happy with how it turned out. And I think it's going to help you do very well in your rookie drafts.
Absolutely. And in those best ball streets, it'll help you out a ton there.
100%.
So, all right. Thanks, guys, and we will see you next week.
From the Podfather to you, I deeply appreciate you tuning in. And many ask, what can I do? What can I do to help support the hosts, the research they do, the production costs? Go to playerprofiler.com, Dynasty Deluxe, World Famous Draft Kit, Rankings, DFS Dominator, and of course, Data Analysis. Subscribe to any one of those, and you support all of us, and take Player Profiler to the moon.